Now, what's a nice physicist like you doing at the National Institute of Standards and Technology?
Well, it's a great place to do physics, and it's a great place to do physics that has application to what's important to our country.
And your area is this high-temperature superconductivity, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to ask you to explain this, but high temperature in terms of the work you're doing means temperatures we normally encounter at room temperature, say, as opposed to 0 degrees, absolute zero?
Oh, right. So there's really two aspects to answer your question. The first part is the thing you're talking about, high-temperature superconductivity. Well, that's an effect that hopefully brings superconductivity to everyday life, right? So electrons can flow without resistance in the material. And in terms of what's important to our country right now, this can increase the efficiency of virtually everything that goes on in our household, reducing energy requirements of essentially everything, from transmission to your computer to everything. Now, the big question in physics is how do we bring superconductivity to actual room temperature? So high-temperature superconductivity isn't really that high yet anyway. So what we call high-TC, or high-temperature superconductivity, was discovered in 1987. And there, people discovered a material which superconducted above the temperature that nitrogen liquefies at, above 77 Kelvin. And room temperature is 300 Kelvin, so there's a long way to go in temperature. Nowadays, high-temperature superconductors can superconduct at temperatures as high as 150 Kelvin, so only half of room temperature in absolute units. And the big stumbling block here is we physicists don't understand what makes high-temperature superconductivity work. And that's where researchers like myself come in. So what I'm trying to do is use systems which look a lot like high-temperature superconductors to try to understand at a basic level how they work, to bring the ability then to engineer materials that work at high temperature.
And when you say materials, do you mean actual physical materials?
I mean, so when I'm talking about high-temperature superconductivity, I'm talking about a chunk of stuff. And what we do in the laboratory then is we engineer something which is kind of like a material. It's actually a lattice of atoms in ultra-high vacuum that we've cooled to exceptionally low temperatures in such a way that we can really engineer precisely what they do. So I build a system which is analogous to high-temperature superconducting materials or other kinds of superfluid materials, and I try to bring my understanding of that analog system to bear on the actual material system that we'd like to understand.
So in the ultimate sense that we could have a transmission grid, for example, in which all of the power went from point A to point B and wasn't lost in the resistance of the wires themselves. Is that the holy grail here?
Right. I would say that for our national interest, that's one of the most important things, is to really decrease the energy losses in our transmission grid, which are very high right now.
And so you talk about, you know, the practical applications of it, you know, for the economic benefit of the country. Can you talk about it? Can you project out your work a little bit? Should you find this material, be able to prove it out, manufacture it or get it made, and then put it into practical application? What might you expect the end product to be?
Well, the end product will be wires that anyone can buy that you connect between two things that don't have any resistance. And just like copper wires now have started to become interconnects in computers, this kind of technology ultimately will be ported over to the semiconductor industry, to wiring in your houses and everything. But this is something that's a long way out, which is why NIST has an interest in it. We do basic research that we don't think that industry can fund right now because the risk is too high.
And the research that you do, what form does it take? Is it mostly running computer models, or do you actually have physical materials that are manipulated? What do you do day by day in terms of the research?
So what we do is we take an atom, in this case, what I use right now is rubidium, and we start with a piece of rubidium, and we heat it up to a temperature just a little bit warmer than your hand, and that produces rubidium vapor. This is all inside of a vacuum chamber. And then we cool the rubidium with lasers until it reaches ridiculously low temperature. So I was talking about 77 Kelvin before. We cool our rubidium atoms down with lasers to avoid, say, 20 microkelvin, so 20 millionths of a degree above absolute zero. And then we capture them with what's called a magnetic trap and cool them yet more. And the whole point of doing this is to take this atom and make it at such a low temperature that we really have reduced it to a quantum mechanics problem, right? Quantum mechanics describes the basic functioning of particles in real physical systems, but a material is very complicated. It has crystal vibrations. It's at a very high temperature. So what we're trying to do is do what physicists always do and reduce something that's complicated to something simple. And right now, we don't even understand that simple thing. So what we've done then with the rubidium atoms is we've put them in a lattice, so they're arrayed just like the atoms in a crystal, forming some kind of a crystalline structure. And we've studied how this system undergoes a transition from which it does have no resistance, that is, it's a superconductor or superfluid, to a new state, which is an insulator, so it does not have any kind of lossless transport. So it's more like a semiconductor silicon or something. So what we do is we create physical systems which are analogous to the superconducting system and try to study these much, much simpler systems so that we can understand them. So that's why I say this is research that's, I would say that if this way of doing things pays out, the time frame for having applied superconductors might be 15 or 20 years. And that's, again, why the federal government funds it and why we don't ask Intel to do it. They can't really take this kind of risk with that kind of horizon.
We're talking to Dr. Ian Spielman, physicist at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And he is also nominated for a Service to America Medal from the Partnership for Public Service. And just one quick question for you. Why did you choose to work for the federal government at the National Institute of Standards and Technology and maybe not to go into research at a university or some other institute of higher learning, or maybe even in private industry? What was it about government research that attracted you?
Well, I think the thing I like about government research is twofold. First, we have a whole lot of resources in the government, and I have wonderful colleagues here at NIST, so it's already a physical environment which is very, very different than, say, a university lab where you're a professor working by yourself. Here I'm part of a group, and we have a very strong team that's working together on these efforts, and that's wonderful. The other thing is I like that our research is sort of, by its very nature, something that's designed to be sort of in the interest of the country in the long run. So I have a whole structure above me and below me that's designed to select those problems which are important, and that allows me to focus on these problems. I like that aspect of it as well.
Well, we like the fact that you like it, and we are so pleased that you joined us today. Wish you the best of luck with your SAMMY's award, and I'm sure at some point in the near future we'll be talking about the Nobel Prize that you've won, too. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, and have a nice morning.